You are listening to the strongest podcast in CrossFit. This is the Type 1 Lifting Podcast. Before we start the show, I'd like to thank the sponsors that are helping this podcast grow. The first one is Liberté Lifestyle. Liberté Lifestyle have the best knee sleeves in the game. I've worn all different types of knee sleeves, and I always go back to Liberté. They're super durable, they don't rip, and they last a very, very long time. So go check out Liberté Lifestyle and check out all the different styles of knee sleeves that they have. And then the next one we have is Hero Barbell. Hero Barbell is the fastest growing barbell company in the functional fitness community. Their barbells have all different colors, all different designs, super comfortable. The knurlings are amazing, and the spin on these barbells are absolutely insane. So go to Hero Barbell to check out all the different type of barbells that they have in stock. And then the last one is Sharpen the Axe. Sharpen the Axe, I've been wearing their clothes for multiple years. They're long sleeve shirts, sweatshirts, shorts. I always wear them. You may have even seen them on the podcast before they became a sponsor. Super comfortable. The shorts I always wear working out because I just feel like they're a better fit for me compared to the Nikes or any other shorts in the game. So all these companies, I have a promo code. It's all type one. So click type one in all the promo code sections and you get 10% off of every item you get. So once again, thank you for these companies to help this podcast grow, and let's go to the show. All right, guys, welcome to a new episode of the Type 1 Lifting Podcast. I have a very awesome guest. I was looking forward to doing this podcast with him. He is a IFBB pro and a doctor in chiropractic practice, Dr. Brett Kahn. How you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I actually saw you, I think it was on, I know it was on Instagram. And so I saw you on search page, and you came up, and I was like, oh snap, he's a diabetic too. That's awesome. You know, I've never really hear of like too many like diabetic bodybuilders, and you were kind of like the first one to show up. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. There's, there's not too many of us, obviously. You know, the difficulty of managing type one is one thing, but then, you know, adding the component of bodybuilding, which, you know, similar to CrossFit in that manner, pushes your body in different directions and different things. And when your body composition is changing to add muscle and get, you know, this big and then get as lean as possible, there's a lot more that goes into it. You know, obviously, you know, lows and highs and stuff can really deter someone from it. So, you know, it was a bit of a challenge at first, but one that I enjoyed and kind of continued on with.
Very cool. Now, when I was doing some research on you, I did listen to a couple podcasts. So, what do you think about doing podcasts?
I've done a handful of them or so over the years, but yeah, they're cool. They're enjoyable. You know, usually, you know, you get a little banter back and forth, learn something, from who's ever putting it on, like yourself. Like, you know, I just got a little bit of background on you, you know, prior to this. And I was like, heck, I'm just going to jump in, you know, answer the questions as they come, and then go from there. But yeah, man.
Very cool. No gotcha. I don't do gotcha moments. So just to let you know. So there's no gotcha stuff in here. So, cool. I know, like, I'm relatively new to the bodybuilding space. Cause like, you know, I mainly do CrossFit and like Olympic weightlifting, and I've always wanted to learn a little bit more in the space. But before I kind of talk about that, I always ask like my diabetic guests, you know, when did they get diagnosed with diabetes?
Yeah. So my story, I'll try to keep it, you know, shorter, but I was a college athlete. So I played football at Michigan State University, and I think my pancreas just kind of slowly stopped making insulin, really over the course of like a year and a half. Like it seemed like a long, because I had a lot of the symptoms and they seemed to really kind of increase. And I wasn't officially diagnosed until right after a bowl game my senior year. I had played in the Champ Sports Bowl and I was down about 24 pounds my normal weight. I was already one of the smaller guys on the team. So I'm running down the field, you know, Division I football, weighing like 160 something pounds, looking like, you know, I was straight out of high school, where I should have been, you know, at my biggest. And then I was working a summer job. It was just like a couple weeks after that. I remember just, you know, mopping. I could only mop like maybe, you know, a 5 foot space. And I was just like out of breath and just about to keel over. The doc called up. I was like, yeah, we got your blood work in. Your blood sugar is 800. I was like, sounds like a big, is that a good number? No, I don't know. And he's like, yeah, you need to go to the ICU right now, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, that was kind of the beginning of it. But I had felt so bad leading into that, that it was like anything I did, I would get sick. And obviously polyuria, probably, you know, dipsia and all that stuff, that I was just really more than anything, just relieved to be like, well, shit, I thought I was dying, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and my body's just eating itself away for so long that, you know, it really should have been caught sooner, but you know, once it was, I was like, all right, this is a diagnosis. Let's just roll with it.
Yeah. Now, I do have to give you a heads up. So I know you played at Michigan State. I'm a huge Michigan fan. I hope it doesn't ruin the podcast, but obviously, like, you know, being a D1 athlete, and I know I believe you did track for a little while too.
Yeah. So just like my like a year and a half, and then stuck with football.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, when you got diagnosed with diabetes, it was kind of like a little bit of a relief that you knew actually what was going on. So how were you handling, you know, your diabetes throughout like the whole, like the next season or whatnot?
Yeah. So, I mean, the unfortunate thing was, is that it was right after my senior season, like literally like a week or so after. So, you know, it was kind of sad in the fact that, you know, I was playing more as like a sophomore, junior, but it was like halfway through my junior, my senior year, you know, I was just trying to survive, you know, practices. Like, I mean, I was like, you know, just on the brink of dying. And the crazy thing was, I remember we were doing summer conditioning and I'm trying to eat more than anyone on the team. I'm talking about, you know, we got guys 320 pounds. I would eat three massive plates of food every single time I sat down. And the more I ate, the more weight I lost. And I remember this thinking like, this is weird. Like the more I'm eating, the more weight I'm losing, because the blood sugar is just going crazy, right? Nothing was being absorbed. And then certain points we would do really intense conditioning, like just all sorts of like, you know, hours something workouts, sprints out in the sun, stadium steps. And the more I ran, my weight, I would start gaining weight again. So what was happening is I was offsetting it with a crazy amount of intense physical activity, was bringing my blood sugars down. So I was, you know, probably in a range to where I wasn't as malnourished from, you know, being crazy high blood sugars. I remember telling one of my assistant strength coaches that, and he's like, that's crazy, man. Like, what, that makes no sense. I was like, I know it doesn't, but I was just like, I don't know what's going on. So yeah, it wasn't until just after that. And then, you know, I guess I was lucky enough in the way that we had some nutritionists on staff. And at that point, the docs were kind of like, shit, we missed this, you know, which is like, I mean, it's the biggest red flag in the world if you know the symptoms. Mm-hmm. Although I was kind of, honestly, I was trying to hide it, you know, because I was like trying to gain weight. So I was weighing in, we had to weigh in before every single weightlifting session. And we would wear like the football pants, where you put your pads in it, the thigh pads underneath our shorts is just like, you know, underwear basically. So I would just slip a 5 pound weight in each of them to make sure that, you know, they weren't catching on to me losing weight. Right.
Yeah.
That's just crazy and stupid when I go back and think about it. But after that, it was like, you know, my body just responded to, you know, food and stuff again, and being in the gym. And it was like, you know, within the matter of a couple months, everyone's like, shit, Con, like, what happened to you? Like, you look good, you know, like you look, you know, beefy and busky. Like, where was this, you know? And then I kind of explained the whole situation to everybody.
Yeah. So when you got diagnosed after like the whole season was over, did your friends kind of understand what was going on with like your new diagnosis at all?
You know, it was weird. And I've seen this with, you know, diabetics that are newly onset and some that I've, you know, worked with and stuff. I didn't want, and maybe it was the mindset of like, it's not broke, don't fix it, or I'm a tough guy in the Vince. I wasn't really telling anybody about it. You know, I told like a few people about it. And then I just kind of kept it to myself for the most part, you know, a few people heard here and there, because it was like after the season and stuff. So it wasn't as big of a deal as if maybe I was, you know, diagnosed during. But yeah, I was, I don't know if I was ashamed. I just didn't know how to have the conversation. you know, those weird things about going out to eat, you know, I'd maybe go to the bathroom and do my insulin, you know, and eventually I got over that. And I'm like, A, I don't, shouldn't care what people think. And yeah. B, you know, like I don't, I'm not going to run to the bathroom every time I need to eject because I'm ejected so often.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you were at a big, big school for the Big Ten. There, you must have some, do you have like any funny stories of like your college experience? Like anything, like does that have to be diabetes related?
Shoot. I mean, sports, like sports related, I'll say the first game that, that I played in and traveled to was, Notre Dame, and we ended up winning in like triple overtime. And, it wasn't my idea, but someone on the team grabbed our flag and ran it, to the middle of the field and planted it in the middle of the field. And, it ended up being on like the cover of like the, you know, the newspaper and everything. And I had a lot of people at home back where I'm from didn't even know I was at Michigan State playing there, because I actually had originally taken a scholarship to a smaller D1 school my freshman year. Mm-hmm. But then I was a preferred walk-on at Michigan State, meaning like you don't have to try out and you're probably going to get a scholarship, but we're not giving you a scholarship out the gate. So then I had came back to that. And, you know, by the time I was playing, people were like, hey, I heard you're on, like, so basically I'm in the cover of like the newspaper playing the flag at Notre Dame's field, which is pretty cool, you know, and
that's cool.
Real, you know, being that's where, you know, Rudy and stuff was filmed, and I had, you know, watched that and enjoyed it growing up.
Very cool. Do you still have the newspaper?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Is it framed? You have to frame it.
No, I don't have it framed. It's probably just with a bunch of other crap. I'd probably have to dig around to find it.
All good. So obviously, like the whole season's over. So did you, is the reason why you kind of got into bodybuilding, was it kind of like an empty space of like not playing sports? Because for me, like I played sports in college. It was obviously, it was like a low, small, like D3 school. And I just felt like kind of empty. Did you have that feeling at all?
Yeah, I remember, you know, right after, it's like, because I mean, as you know, like, every minute of like our schedules were given to us, and they weren't like, all right, from 5 to 5:30 you're doing this. It was like from 5 to 5:17 you're doing this, and from, you got 3 minutes to get here, so from 5:21 to, you know, so there was a void. And obviously I was like, all I knew was like, all right, go in and lift. And I just tried to kind of continue that, but it was a very odd feeling, because we would have, I don't know, 5-6 strength coaches on breathing down us. We're always partnered up, so always someone's pushing you, beating you up. So like you go to the gym alone after that, and it's like crickets and hard. It was really hard to get motivated. Mm-hmm. But because I was just diagnosed and my body was responding to food again and lifting, it was like, I was getting, you know, I was going from like this disheveled, you know, malnourished guy for X amount of time to like, you know, the self I should have been, you know? So I went from like, whatever, like, you know, maybe up to like 185, 190, and from like one in the 160s, you know. So I mean, I was loving it, you know.
Yeah,
I could have just went in there and just, you know, walked around the gym, and I would have gained weight because you know, I was finally getting food and nutrition again.
Yeah, very cool. So when did you realize you kind of wanted to push like the bodybuilding like a little bit further than, you know, like a typical person, like a typical gym goer?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was actually quite a while after that, you know. So from there, I went to chiropractic school. I was there for 4 years, and I just stayed in the gym and I lifted, and, you know, I would try to eat almost groundhog day like meals just for blood sugar control. So it was more about, you know, just health and wellness. I just kind of continued lifting. And then I opened my practice. So, you know, at this point I'm, you know, I opened right out of school at 28. And, you know, I'd seen a show locally, and I looked, and there was the men's physique division, which is more like the cover of like men's health. Like you wear the board shorts, you don't have to wear like the bikini bottoms and stuff. And I was like, that's cool. I think I could, you know, maybe do that. Maybe I'll put it as like a bucket list thing. Cause I had come down here and I played some intramural softball and, you know, flag football. And, you know, as a chiropractor, I'm working with my hands. Like, you know, jam my finger and sprain my wrist once. I'm like, you know, I'm getting more injuries playing intramurals than I ever did in college. So maybe I should, you know, align this energy. So, yeah, so I was just like, heck, I'll do a show as a bucket list thing. I had always thought it was cool, but I never wanted to look like a massive bodybuilder, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't think the men's physique division was really kind of a thing until like maybe 2011. And then at that point, it was kind of like, oh, it's like, you know, bodybuilders without legs, you know, they don't train legs. And it kind of had that kind of stigma around it. But yeah, so I did my first local show and ended up winning it. And I remember talking to the judges after, like, yeah, you got a real good look and good structure and stuff. They're like, but you just need to come in a lot more condition. Cause I was in the mindset of like, you know, get bigger and bodybuilding big. And so I was a lot softer than I probably should. I've always been a bit genetic with my abs. So I had, you know, a bit of a six pack there. It's like, well, you need to lean out to where you get your obliques. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, like I've always had a six pack. I've always been in shape, you know, like, yeah. And I had done no cardio for this show. You know, I just lifted a little harder and I didn't really even diet that hard. Now again, it was a little bit easier in those initial years of the division too, but I'm thinking like, I don't have those. And from that point forward, I was like, well, I'll do the national show. So I took the diet a little more seriously, you know, added a little cardio in. And then, you know, I just kind of saw all those little pieces add up and make a difference. And, you know, when I did step on the national stage, I was just, you know, seeing where my hat would hang with those guys. And long story short, ended up, you know, winning, going like 100% into it, ended up winning the show. And then when you do that, you get your pro card. So at that point, I'm like, well, now I guess I have to see what, you know, these, mm-hmm. how I do against the pros. And, you know, one thing led to another there, placed in the, you know, top five in a bunch of pro shows, did the Arnold, got some sponsorships with, you know, supplement companies and things like that. And then that's kind of led me to where I am now, which is, you know, focusing more on coaching people to compete and people on the, you know, diet side of things as well,
okay.
Which is just as fulfilling, but with a little less cardio myself and a little less downtime. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think the men's physique is kind of like one of the toughest divisions to kind of like get your start in or like go pretty far? Because there's like tons of people from my point of view, I think there's a lot of people that already have that physique and can like easily walk in there and, you know, go to a show compared to like, obviously the bigger guys, they have to take like, you know, do a lot more things to get to that level. So do you think it's kind of harder to actually break into that category?
You know, it's become more and more popular and there's a ton of competitors. There's guys that have it naturally. There's guys that, you know, put in a ton of work to get there. The ones at the very top and the ones that are going to typically be pros are the ones that now have all components. So they're, you know, they have the genetics, but they're also have to be extremely hard workers because it's a 24/7 sport. You know, it's every little thing that you do, which really aligns with being type 1 diabetic, right? Because like this thing follows us everywhere. Like, everything that we eat, everything that we do, you know, take a hot shower, what's my blood sugar going to do? Like take a nap, what's it going to do? You know, every, you know, morsel that we put in our body, if you're dehydrated, you know, I always explain it as it's keeping a scale balance, but instead of two sides, you got like 10. And bodybuilding is similar to where, you know, you have to be very specific on everything that you put in your body, the timing of it all, the rest of it all, you know, the percentages of your macros and your cardio and your caloric intake. So it's very detailed in that way, which I was, you know, kind of doing to an extent with just managing diabetes to where, you know, a lot of it meshed well for me. So it's difficult in that sense. But what I always tell people too is, you know, if you're going to be wanting to step on stage, the beauty of the sport is it's really you versus you, right? You get to be the clay and you get to see like, okay, how can I transform my body? What is my body capable of? What am I capable of? Because ultimately, if you're taking yourself to, you know, your best genetic potential, then that's all you can do. So I knew when I had stepped on stage that it was unlike, you know, playing other sports to where, you know, I was nervous and how I was going to do. So I was like, all right, I put in the work, I'm here. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, it's a subjective measure. So whatever that judge thinks is what the placing is, which, you know, is good and bad, right? You know, they're either going to like you or they're not, but it's not like you're competing against the guy next to you, not physically.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. So how did you manage your diabetes throughout, like, you know, getting to like, you know, do you guys do like a dehydration phase, and like how do you manage your diabetes with that like whole process?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, there's different ways to come into a show. So, you know, you kind of have to see how your body reacts. You know, I had done shows to where I would, you know, cut or deplete water. I had even water loaded into a show because you're going to get the body to a certain point from a leanness level. And then the rest is like, how are those muscles going to fill out? You know, yeah. The muscles are majority made of water. So depending on someone's specific anatomy, genetics, how their body responds to those things, then you manipulate them. But, you know, like we said, we have 1, 2, 3, 5 more things to think about. And you start cutting water like that, then all of a sudden you see your blood sugar coming up. So then you really either have to be prepared, or you almost have to do little test runs to see how things are going to play out before they play out, because you don't want to be there on show day. Blood sugars are super high. You know, cortisol ends up being high and it flattens the physique out, and you don't look as
full.
Yeah. Because part of it is, you know, that illusion. You know, you got the tan and the overhead lights, and then you, like I said, you're filling up with carbs, right? And then you're sucking the water out, and it's all of those components that go together to give you that, you know, X amount of seconds on stage, which you're, you know, ultimately judged on.
Yeah. So when you're actually training, and like, in the, like from what I've seen in some videos, that like some people are absolutely miserable for like calorie deficits and stuff like that. How do you still have the mindset that you want to like kind of push through and, you know, present yourself well on the stage?
You know, I think and I've learned this over time, is like you could push yourself as hard as possible and be miserable for, you know, 12, 18, you know, weeks or so. But if you do things the right way and you're at times doing things that might seem counterintuitive to the goal, and you're eating enough and you're keeping your metabolism stoked, and you're doing it progressively, it doesn't have to be like this extremely difficult, you know, everyday sucks type of thing. And it really almost seems like it has to be for some people. You know, some of the guys and people I've prepped before, they're almost like, this doesn't suck enough, it must not be working. And I was like, well, you know, I can make it suck more, but if you put your body in the fight and flight,
yep,
right, it's gonna fight you, you know?
Yeah.
It's gonna think that you're out in the wilderness and there's no food available and you're starving. It's just gonna try to hold on to everything. So you have to be clever, you have to trick it, you gotta throw refeeds or carb cycles and things at it to kind of, you know, keep it guessing and keep it moving in the right direction. And there's going to be a few weeks that suck typically at the end, but it doesn't have to necessarily be months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Now, have you ever heard of a guy named Marcus Philly?
Not ringing a bell.
So he does this thing called functional bodybuilding. He was like a former CrossFit athlete turned, you know, he retired cause he kept on getting absolutely wrecked during like CrossFit workouts. And he's like absolutely like shredded. So whenever you get a chance, you gotta check out his Instagram page. It's like everyone calls him like the Greek goddess because he's like so ripped. But do you think that someone that just does like CrossFit and functional bodybuilding could actually step on a stage just doing that kind of workouts for the for pretty much for any category?
Well, like I said, it depends. Like, you're not going to step on as a bodybuilder being a CrossFitter.
Yeah,
there's too much size. There's too much caloric burn in those workouts. You know, like now you could step in stage in men's physique, right? And you know, if you have a nice build, I mean, there's CrossFitters that look great. You know, that if you learn how to suck the air in and pose and position properly, you know, they could step on stage probably at their whatever they compete at. Some of them, you know, I mean, you know, it surprises me how lean some of these guys can be that do CrossFit and still be so effective from a production standpoint, weightlifting wise, because, you know, if you strip the shirts off of, you know, collegiate football players, you think they all have, you know, ripped, shredded bodies. No. You know, you might have a few guys genetically that do, but for the most part, you got a lot of extra calories on you because, you know, you probably have to eat 8K a day just to, you know, be able to perform like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think I answered the question.
Yeah. No, you did. Now, funny thing is, most of those like elite CrossFit athletes, they're consuming an absorbent amount of carbs every day. like yeah. every day. Like I've heard people doing like 600 to 800, you know, that's they're, you know, it's insane of like the amount of food they're actually consuming. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, you were talking about, you know, you being a doctor and, you know, being a chiropractor. So, I know that takes like a long time to get done. So like, what is it? Like roughly like 4 or 5 years to, for the whole thing?
4 years. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I got it done in 3.5. So that, you know, they tell you like, you know, like you can get the program done in 3.5. And that's if like, you don't fail a single class basically. Mm-hmm. And I think our class started with like 140 and there's only 30 of us that got through in 3.5 because wow. you know, if you fail one, just, you know, based on when those courses are offered, then it sets you back, you know, basically half a year. So I was like, that's nope, I'm getting, you know, getting it done. I was lucky to get it done 3.5, but yeah.
Yeah. Very good. So what made you get into that kind of that field?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my background and stuff, in sports for one, you know, actually when I was in middle school, I was playing football and I kind of jammed my head into the back of another player and messed my neck up pretty good. I had a good experience with a chiropractor then. And my dad had thrown his back out and I saw it work well for him. And then, you know, I grew up with my father being in the construction trade. So like my mind's always been very mechanical and structural and stuff. And our body works in, you know, many of the same ways. We got, you know, hinges and pulleys and, you know, from a functional standpoint, it's always been something that's interested me. It's been intriguing. To understand just how the human body works, because it is really such a cool, you know, marvelous miracle if you understand it. So yeah, I was just kind of drawn to it from that side of things. And I thought I wanted to do something in the healthcare field. And, you know, when I thought about being a chiro, I was like, that just seemed like it.
Yeah. Clicked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know, from listening to another podcast, you actually got it done at Life University down in Atlanta, my neck of the woods. So
in Atlanta. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Marietta, just outside of Atlanta there. Yep.
Yep. I live for like about a half hour, 40 minutes away north.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good, awesome. It's a good time. Good place. So what were your thoughts about, Georgia?
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was cool. It was like a bunch of different pockets. Obviously it's like, you know, I was a young adult when I was there, but you're in school. So it's kind of like, you don't have any money to do much of anything. So yeah. But I love, you know, going to, you know, some of the Blue Ridge Mountains and the hikes and stuff and, you know, having sports teams there. I was actually just back for Michigan State's bowl game, Peach Bowl. So that was mm-hmm. cool to meet up with everybody. And it was kind of being in Atlanta and enjoying like the warmer southern weather and stuff that made me say to myself, okay, I want to start my practice somewhere, you know, in the South. And I've ultimately landed in South Carolina here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what made you, what was the final decision for South Carolina?
Just, you know, be by the beach, warm weather, golf, basically those things. Yeah.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. Now, I mean, I've heard some chiropractor horror stories before and, you know, like what makes you different compared to like anybody else?
Well, you know, some of the horror stories, I mean, I don't know. It depends. It's 10 years for me. And like, I haven't seen a horror story in my office. So, you know, I think movies sometimes dramatize things and people think like, oh, like, you know, when Jean-Claude Van Damme, like just walks up and twists someone's head that they're gonna die, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really not like that. And I also practice more personally as a, I don't know, you almost think of me as like a hybrid chiro. So I do a bit of, you know, PT and rehab type stuff, a lot of soft tissue work, like Gradston and, you know, like instrument assisted soft tissue mobilization or active release, a lot of stuff that, you know, athletes and, you know, bodybuilders and stuff can benefit from a soft tissue standpoint, because your joints work obviously integrated with your musculoskeletal system. Mm-hmm. So if one's not working right, you know, the other's affected. So try to make sure that we cover all the bases.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Now, do you get mad when someone doesn't call you a doctor at all?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, paid a lot for the letters, but no, I mean, that's one of the things I do love about being a chiro too, is like, oftentimes people are a little nervous or apprehensive, you know, when they come in, and sometimes they're kind of like, yeah, I'm going for back, you know, they've been nervous to come in, but they're going under the knife in like, you know, a couple months, And they're kind of like, I figured I'd give it a try now. So it's cool when you're able to help someone out like that. And they're kind of like, oh, wow, like this really works, you know, and they usually like laugh. And then people like to come see us, which is neat, you know? So like, I enjoy it. I mean, my patients and the ones that come for like more wellness care, they've been seeing me as things spring up or just, you know, from time to time to make sure they're moving better. And, you know, it's neat because I've garnered those relationships with all sorts of people.
Yeah. I've never been to one. I've always wanted to go to one. I just don't know. I never pulled the trigger.
Yeah. Some of the old school guys are, you know, in my opinion, and not to bash the profession, but yeah, every profession has theirs, you know, people, I mean, shoot, you don't want to go to the wrong MD and God knows what sort of poison they're going to give you, you
true.
Know?
Yeah.
And, you know, with the chiropractic profession too, the philosophy used to be like, oh, I adjust the bone in place and I fix this and that. And, you know, I think there's been, you know, a wealth of meshing knowledge now with just the ability for practitioners to cross-populate and, you know, theories and things to be shared. It's almost where like doctors of physical therapy now are doing a lot more manual therapy and stuff that chiros are doing, and chiros are doing a lot more of the PT stuff, which has been interesting and cool to see.
Yeah,
that's always the direction that I've wanted to see the profession go. I would actually love to be able to prescribe certain medications, you know, for certain things. So if someone is in a ton of pain and they need like an anti-inflammatory painkiller, you know, it'd be nice to say, okay, you can just get it here and yeah. give you a limited amount. And I'm really going to preach about like, let's use this to just get you out of, you know, severe pain so that we can maybe work on the issue and get you feeling better. Versus like, here's a script for 90 of them, go get a ticket, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wouldn't want my malpractice insurance to be as high as this guy.
Yeah, I don't like taking anything. I'm a big fan of like, you know, working it out in like mobility or anything like that, just to kind of, you know, heal myself instead of like, you know, just popping Advil or whatever, you know, icy hots and stuff. It's like, I don't think it's worth it. It's better to kind of move and, you know, get better that way.
Well, yeah, I would say it should be a hierarchy, right? You know, and I'll use this with my patients sometimes. Like if I was there and I was standing on your toe right now, your toe's going to be hurting, right? Like what's the most logical thing for you to do?
Move.
You know, you're not going to say like, damn, Brett, my toe's hurting me. Like will you pass me some Advil? And you're give me something stronger. Yeah. All right, it's working, but it's still there. All right, we're going to go and we're going to inject the toe. And you're like, that's toe feels good now. For 2 days, right? But now the toe's, you know, coming back. It's like, okay, we're going to go in and we're just going to do a, you know, a little dissection of a nerve, you know? And, but then you have another issue. It's like, okay, well, let's cut the, no, like, let's see if structurally, physically, we can just get me off the toe, push me mm-hmm. back, right? And that's sometimes when joints and muscles or, you know, postural components to it or something's not moving correctly. If you can do that, then, you know, that's where you should start. Which isn't always the case because you have a limitation of matter, right? You know, if someone's, you know, joint or back is, degenerated to a certain extent, you may be able to get them out of pain. You may not be able to, but those tools are always there. But they can be a little more risky and a little more dangerous.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Very cool. Now, I kind of want to go back to the bodybuilding real quick because I forgot to add this question. So I've actually seen some YouTube. When I was doing some research on you, I saw some, you know, YouTube videos of you during like bodybuilding.com, the YouTube channel, like working out with like other bodybuilders.
Yeah.
Who was like one of your most favorite, you know, bodybuilders to train with? Like it could be for like the day or, you know, if someone's close by, like which one was like really stuck out to you? Like, man, like this is like beating in another level.
Yeah. I would probably say like Ryan Terry, who's won, you know, the men's physique, Arnold, and, you know, you're always a contender at the Olympia, or Sadiq, you know, Sadiq's, you know, one of the most classic, I think, physiques, you know, from our era that would probably go, you know, he'll be like, he's basically the Frank Zane of our time. You know, him and I had both actually had the same coach when I was competing. Which is also a cool part of the sport is the, you know, networking and, you know, relationships and stuff that, that you build over time. But yeah, those guys, probably both of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Now, obviously like, it's kind of like a one-on-one person, but like, do you like get friendships throughout the whole process? Like, have you like met like some like good friends be like, hey, I know this guy, you know, he's a great guy, you know, stuff that. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, all those guys, I have their numbers. And, you know, when you do what, like what you, what we do is like bodybuilders and stuff. It's kind of like you and I, like before we met, we're in a club together.
Yeah.
You know, we're like when diabetics, like, you know, we have, you know, that like unspoken relationship to where like, okay, I know what this guy goes through on a daily basis. And you kind of have that, you know, connection from a humanistic standpoint. And, you know, to be able to be as dedicated and put in the time and hours that it takes to, you know, be at that level and compete at that level, you have that mutual respect and understanding for each other too. And, you know, when you get up there with some of those top guys, and I had a period of time when I was, you know, competing at that level, but with all that I do now, it's like, is either going to be that or, you know, run my practice and coach people. And, mm-hmm. You know, I took my genetics as far as I could. And I was like, all right, tip the hat, you know, the guys are getting too big for me, and, you know, now I'll go on and coach. But yeah, so, yeah, I've been lucky enough to make a good bunch of relationships.
Very cool. Now you talk about coaching. So, what made you get into to coaching pretty much?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I had been, you know, cultivating, I guess, the knowledge from, you know, playing days to education to, you know, understanding more about nutrition and then, you know, taking, you know, courses, endocrinology, physiology, all these things. So like, it was kind of there on an underlying basis. Actually, I had even, without any certification when I was in college, you know, Michigan State would train a couple people here or there, mm-hmm. and just enjoyed that. So, you know, once I got a bit of a name competing and stuff, locally, people would ask me to coach them. And then I just kind of started, you know, taking people on from there. And usually keep it to a limited amount. In the past year, I've opened up more time to coach more people, which has been cool because I've been able to be more involved in stuff with it, which has been cool.
Yeah. So which is better, you winning on stage or seeing one of your proteges that you coach win on stage?
Yeah. It's definitely seeing someone that I've coached win on stage. Yeah, 100%. It's always been like that, you know, whether it's like a family member or a friend, like, or someone I've coached, it's just, I don't know, it's emotionally just a different beast, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a lack of control, you know, when you're there, but like, you know, you want them to win so bad, versus I've always been, you know, just at peace with like, all right, I'm cool. I'm eating my cheat. I'm going to eat whatever I want after this, so I don't care what happens, you know. I mean, the people that I've been, you know, fortunate enough to help turn pro, like, it's just been super, super cool and super fulfilling. And, memories I won't forget. And I know, you know, those guys, you know, it's a point in time in their life where, you go through it with them, you push them to that point, to get their pro card, and you help someone realize a dream like that is pretty awesome. And I know, you know, they're appreciative of it and we'll have that bond forever.
Yeah, very cool. And I did hear in a podcast you were actually training another type 1 diabetic. Do you have like any other ones that you train in? Like, how do you handle their diabetes like while they're training?
Yeah. Well, you know, as you probably know, like everyone's diabetes is a little bit different. You know, I probably have, I've had more different points in time, but I probably have 5 to 7, you know, right now. Some are competing, some are just, you know, lifestyle people. But everyone's a little bit different. You know, I have a female competitor right now, who I've just started working with, and she has done an amazing job of keeping her blood sugars under control, but she's super low carb. She's maybe 15, 20 carbs a day.
What?
And yeah. And she has extremely, extremely tight, maybe the tightest blood sugars I've ever seen, out to where she'll adjust down if she's at like 110. And I'm just like, so then, you know, so we're trying to formulate and change her plan and introduce some, you know, variants in her macro profile so that we can get her body maybe where it's going to look best on stage. Mm-hmm. But it's been neat because I've been able to learn. I mean, she's had A1Cs in the fours, where most docs are probably like, okay, you're, you know, probably on the brink of hypo too often. And, but she's done well with it. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. But and that's where I don't always try to impress 100% of what I would do, because everyone's body works different. And
yeah,
and you know, it's worked well for her. She's got great control. But at the same time, probably because of and she's been a nurse and been in the diabetes education side of things too. She's scared crazy of carbohydrates. Like, they just terrify.
That's crazy. Yeah. I eat a good
one. What do you mean I need to add 30 carbs? Like, my blood sugar is going to go through the roof. And I was like, it shouldn't. And you have, she's got, you know, multiple, she's got a Frieza, she's got Novolog, and you know, she doesn't really use short acting. She just kind of does her basal, and just up with food. So it'd be neat. It'd be cool to see where we go.
Yeah. I mean, I would kill for an A1C at four, like, or for leaving somewhere close to that. So,
yeah, but she had an interesting, you know, I said, well, you know, I questioned her. I said, well, you know, what's normal blood sugar? And she's like 80 to 110. I was like, well, they say 80 to 120. Right. So, you know, if you're a little bit over that, or maybe you're high normal. And she's like, yeah, but I don't know if I believe that. And I was like, okay. I mean, I could also see where you're coming from. Like, these are studies and these are normal ranges that are formulated by what population?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Normal, healthy functioning individuals, but these are normal, healthy functioning individuals that, are on Americanized diets, right?
Yep.
Like, yeah, this, maybe they're 30 something year olds, but you know, they eat McDonald's and processed foods and all this crap. So, you know, I think her philosophy is like, I feel like a tighter range of 70 to 100 in her mind is ideal. And you know, it's hard to say this, what the research shows, as long as you're not risking, you know, losing your sense of hypoglycemia and she's under good control, then you know, I'd rather see that than someone that's like okay being in the low twos. Mm-hmm. You know, because mm-hmm. ultimately that's the slow one that gets you.
Yeah. Okay. All right, very cool. So we're getting close to the end. So, well, one other question about you being a coach before we do that. So, like, what is your because obviously, like, every coach has different styles of training. So, what's your style of coaching?
When it comes to like training, I'm a big variety guy. So, you know, with most of my clients, I'm going to be changing their plans every 3 weeks, and within that, we may see, you know, progressions of of certain exercises, but oftentimes like the split's going to change. You know, the body parts that we train together may vary. You know, they're often in bodybuilding, they're going to be more body part specific, but mm-hmm. like there might be, you know, it might be a chest day, you know, one time, and then arms are done a separate day. And then a different progression might be, you know, chest and triceps, or it might be opposing groups. It might be, you know, antagonist muscle group paired with it. And you know, I believe in mixing up your rep ranges a lot, circuits and stuff closer to shows to help improve conditioning, things like that.
Okay. All right, cool. All right. So, here are the final questions. So, do you have any goals for the rest of the year? It could be like personal or business wise.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm going to build the coaching a little bit more this year. It's been fun just kind of see it evolve in a more systematic in way in which I'm doing it. Just with technology out there, I can get people plugged into the computer, you know, with a Fitbit to where I can see how many steps they're doing, and mm-hmm. you know, I can see all their food intake, and it's just it's cool. It's like I'm you know the mastermind up here, and I can see all the variables. So I definitely want to grow that some more, and maybe do some more stuff like this, because I always do enjoy it. But sometimes I feel like I'm running around so much I don't have, you know, enough time to do similar.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's the same way too. I'm always having like try to find like set days to interview people, and especially like I have two young kids, so like literally when you texted me saying, "Hey, we're still on for the podcast," I was like running around getting them a shower, like throwing them in bed and getting this ready. So it's hard, but I mean I love doing this, just in meeting people, like especially like you and like other people that, you know, I would have no chance if, you know, I didn't have this to meet you guys.
Sure. No, man. I'm honored to be on the podcast. I'm definitely going to go back through and listen to some of your other shows and stuff too.
Yeah. Very cool. So, do you have a favorite book? Do you like to read?
You know, I'm always into like more like motivational type books and stuff. You know, The Four Agreements, I think, is probably my favorite book. I can't remember who writes it, who wrote it now, but I was going to drop the name, but stuff like that, you know, I always find that it's refreshing and stuff. I find myself just getting into audiobooks, and I try to, you know, put them on with like a sleep timer, like 30, 40 minutes. And I feel like, you know, my OCD brain will pick up little pieces here and there. Hopefully I pick up enough little good things that, you know, I could piece them together.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And then what is in your gym bag?
Oh, my gym bag. You know, usually some wrist straps, if I'm going heavy with certain things to save the hands. I'll have a pre-workout in there, some BCAAs, and then just gym clothes. Usually okay. Layers. I'll usually kind of dress in layers so that I'm, you know, if it's cooler out, I can warm up and then kind of strip down.
Okay. So do BCAAs? Well, I'm
actually,
so,
I think I have a video on YouTube somewhere that I did with Allmax. That's like, what's in your gym bag? And it's okay. Actually how to build like an ideal gym bag, which is something I preach to people too, that are like, oh, I don't have time. And I always tell people, if you put everything that you need, you know, from a clothing standpoint and from like a supplement standpoint in there, and it's with you all the time, then you have no excuse not to go.
Yeah. I'll definitely try to find that and link it to the show too. So, with BCAAs, my problem, if I ever take BCAAs, my blood sugar like goes like high 300s, like taking that stuff. Does that ever happen to you at all or?
No. And that's a unique thing about, cause I've heard that with other type ones too. Now I'm not experienced, like I sip on them all day, you know, not necessarily for the nutritional effect, but the fact that I just like a little bit of flavor in my water and I drink more water with it, if yeah. anything. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky enough to get them free. So, you know, it'd probably add up otherwise. Yeah, yours don't have any sugar or anything in them? Yeah.
No, it just anything. It's crazy.
So yeah, I know some things. Well, like when you mentioned like Advil, you know, I was thinking like anytime I take Advil, my blood sugar is just.
Yeah, that's why I don't like taking anything. So like you, like when you're bodybuilding, I'm a regimen guy. I kind of eat the same thing over and over and over again. And yeah, yeah. The thing is, I don't get bored with it. So it's just like, because I know I'm using it to fuel my body. So it's like,
most people do anyways. They're just doing a bologna sandwich and like, you know, some crap food.
Yeah. true. I'm going to go a little deep on this question. So sure. Let's just say this is your last day on Earth. And, you know, how do you want people to know you as?
Yeah. Ooh. I don't know. I would say, you know, friends, family, or people that I have coached that I'm kind of like a champion for them, you know, like I've always felt like I've, you know, rooted for people to do well. And I like to see people succeed. And I may not always be like running up to someone trying to give them my advice, but whenever, you know, someone asks for it, or if I can help them, you know, I always enjoy that and try to pass it forward because people have done that for me, you know, mentors, coaches, you know, people I've picked their brains. And I think if more people were willing to ask the questions, they would get more answers. Sometimes people are, you know, nervous to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I have a motto called screw it, just do it.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I read a book by Richard Branson. That was the book called Screw It, Just Do It. And that's how, like, you know, that's how we started this podcast. That was how I started like asking people questions about like certain things and stuff like that. Cause it's just like that people want to help out. Like, well, some people, so, yeah. And they want to help out. And so, you know, obviously kind of, especially the older generation, they want to show like, you know, show what they've learned through the years to bring it on to somebody else. So that's, I'm a big proponent of that too.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. So where can people reach out to you if they have any questions about like bodybuilding, getting on your program or anything like that?
Yeah. Really the only social media that I'm active on is my Instagram, which I'm not overly active on there. Most of it you'll see is just some of the stuff that I do with my supplement sponsor stuff, but it's just at Brett Kahn. So B-R-E-T-T-K-A-H-N.
All right. Very cool. Well, Thank you very much for doing this. You know, it's always awesome to talk to another diabetic. I always call people that I've talked to that are diabetic diabuddies. So, I do appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time, because I know you're a busy guy, and I do appreciate everything, you know, from our conversation.
Of course, man. I appreciate you having me.
All right. Thanks.
Cool. Thank you.